This is Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, opponents to the planned closure of the Sullivan County Correctional Facility rallied at the Woodburn Fire Department yesterday to oppose it. We were there, and we'll have a report from the scene. Borscht Belt Fest in Ellenville starts tomorrow and runs through the weekend, promising comedy, cuisine, and culture. We'll have a preview. And it's almost time for the Wayne County Fair. It's the culmination of months of hard work for the 15 4-H clubs in the county. We'll find out what to expect this year. Plus, Delaware Valley Conservancy, Highlands Conservancy, cocktails and conversations, and an artist talk at the Darby. Lots to get to. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Biden says he is going to build unity in the Democratic Party. He spoke last night from the Oval Office about his decision to end his reelection campaign. Biden says it's time to pass the torch to a younger generation. He says he'll finish his term, and NPR's Tamara Keith says Biden has numerous issues to focus on.
A lot of what he can do in these final months is implementation, distributing funds for infrastructure and climate projects, cementing regulations. He said he is going to keep fighting for reproductive rights and civil rights. He's going to keep working on the economy and trying to lower costs, and he'll speak out against extremism and political violence. And of course, he is still trying very hard to get a ceasefire for hostages deal in Gaza.
NPR's Tamara Keith reporting. Biden will meet Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu at the White House today. They'll separately meet a group of families who have relatives held captive by Hamas in Gaza. Later in the day, Netanyahu will also meet Vice President Harris. The U.S. economy grew much more than expected last quarter. Stocks on Wall Street opened mixed. As NPR's Maria Aspen reports, the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 155 points in morning trading.
The nation's economy is still going strong, the Commerce Department reports. Gross domestic product grew at an annual rate of 2.8% in April, May, and June. That's much better than expected and much higher than the beginning of the year. The initial GDP data shows consumers continued to spend money this spring as inflation eased, even though interest rates remain high. Major stock indices were mixed in early trading. The S&P 500 edged up and down, and the NASDAQ fell slightly, a day after a brutal sell-off for big tech companies. Maria Aspen, NPR News, New York.
Russia and China carried out joint military air exercises near Alaska and other parts of the North Pacific Ocean today. As NPR's Charles Maines reports from Moscow, the drills are the latest sign of growing ties between China and Russia amid tensions with the West.
According to Russia's defense ministry, Chinese and Russian strategic nuclear bombers carried out a five-hour air patrol over the Bering Sea and parts of the northern Pacific, including the Alaskan coastline. The ministry noted the bombers were provided cover by Russian fighter jets, but added that fighter jets from other countries were present during a flight path that Russia insisted never strayed from international airspace. That's something the North American Aerospace Defense Command, known as NORAD, later confirmed, as it authorized U.S. and Canadian jets into the air to, quote, meet presence with presence. NORAD says the Russian-Chinese activity never reached the level of a threat. Meanwhile, Russia insists the bombers have since returned to base. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up about 130 points. The NASDAQ is down more than 1%. This is NPR. A top State Department official is urging other countries to support the multinational security force in Haiti. Troops from Kenya are among those helping police in Haiti to quell gang violence, as NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
The Assistant Secretary of State for the Western Hemisphere, Brian Nichols, traveled to Haiti this week along with the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., and he says he was impressed by what he saw. Nichols says the Kenyan commander is working well with the head of the Haitian National Police.
There are not, white Toyota Land Cruisers driving around Port-au-Prince independently trying to enforce security. This is a mission in support of Haitians under Haitian law enforcement and political control. I think that's very different.
He says they've learned lessons from past international failures in Haiti. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
Fire officials in California say the Park Fire, burning north of Sacramento, has skyrocketed in size. It has scorched more than 70 square miles in less than one day. California fire officials say it's only 3% contained. They've warned people near the city of Chico to evacuate. Meanwhile, the largest fire now burning in the U.S. is in eastern Oregon. The Durkee Fire has scorched more than 400 square miles. The heavy wildfire smoke has caused air quality issues, including in neighboring Idaho. The opening ceremonies are tomorrow in Paris for the Olympic Summer Games. First Lady Jill Biden has arrived to lead the U.S. presidential delegation. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include EBSCO, supporting open source technology and making open platforms possible for libraries of all sizes. Learn more at EBSCO.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. State Senator Peter Oberocker of New York's 51st District, local officials, and other opponents rallied at the Woodburn Fire Department yesterday to oppose the planned closure of the Sullivan Correctional Facility scheduled for November 6th. The Fallsburg site is one of two maximum security state correctional facilities DOCCS has marked for closure. The other is Great Meadow Correctional Facility in Washington County. At the Sullivan Correctional Facility, 426 people are currently incarcerated with a capacity of 560 and a current staff of 371. Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio reports.
New York State Senator Oberocker, representing the 51st District, was joined by local officials at a rally held at Woodburn Firehouse on Wednesday, July 24th. The rally was organized in opposition to the planned closure of the Sullivan Correctional Facility on November 6th. New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision cited staffing challenges and low prisoner population as factors in the decision to close these facilities. Senator Oberocker expressed concerns about the short timeline of less than 90 days for the closure and pointed out the closure will have a significant economic impact to the community.
Lack of planning creates undue economic hardship and potentially dangerous situations. 90 days. 90 days to close is totally inadequate, and it's not only unfair to the families who now face economic uncertainty, but from all the tentacles that come out from that. This one brief moment, 90 days to re-register your children in school, 90 days to find a new doctor, 90 days to find a new dentist, 90 days to put your life back together is simply not long enough. If the governor believes changes are needed, and instead of haphazardly closing, we should have a sound plan and develop how to fix it with adequate notice given to all those affected and a plan to help mitigate any negative impact on the local communities. As was previously said, we're talking about our local convenience stores, our laundries, our restaurants. All the services that are provided will be dramatically, dramatically impacted with the closing of this facility. Rehousing inmates, existing inmates, will create a prison overflow, overcrowding, lack of mental health services. I was up and toured the facility at Sullivan today. One of the best mental health services we have in DOCS, and yet it's scheduled to close. It's dangerous. These conditions of relocating and are creating potentially dangerous situations for our COs, our correctional officers, and our communities. Governor Hochul and the extreme liberal left are to blame for this, plain and simple. These closings represent another disturbing extension of the weak on crime policies coming out of Albany. Dangerous bail laws, putting criminals back on the streets, the failure to back our law enforcement, and now hastily closing prisons. I was told that one of the reasons why we're looking at closing is because the population is down. Can any of you look me in the face and say, are you surprised that that is happening with our bail reform? It's a self self-fulfilling prophecy. A self-fulfilling prophecy. Listen, make no mistake, a closing of a prison is not a sign of less crime, as some would insist. It's all part of a growing, disturbing anti-law and order pro-criminal agenda. Bar none. Bar none. If it's a financial issue, I sit on a couple of key committees. One is labor. The other is budget and finance. I found out about the closing here in Sullivan through a tweet. I wasn't even afforded a phone call as the highest ranking legislator in Sullivan County, and something that would be affecting my 51st Senate district. I wasn't even afforded a phone call before I had to find out in the tweet. Totally unacceptable on all levels, on all sides of the aisle, no matter what your party affiliation is. Respect has gone out the door, in my opinion. If it is a financial issue, and I don't know this because I'm still waiting to hear something from our governor or a representative thereof or anything from the second floor. If it is a financial issue, if the governor can find $2.4 billion in this budget to house illegal immigrants, I think we could find a couple hundred million to keep this facility open. So plain and simple, folks, I'm saying this. I'm calling on Governor Hochul to reverse her disastrous position and put the safety of our New Yorkers and our COs and hardworking women and men of our correctional system first.
Bolsburg Supervisor Michael Ben-Simone, who attended the rally, stated that the impact of the closure will be deeply felt.
This is turned into a disaster for the town of Fallsburg and for the community as a whole. All the 371 employees at the Sullivan facility are going to be greatly affected by this closure. These folks are integral parts of our community, part of the fabric of our society, and we don't want to see them or their family go. This happening exactly about a month before the school year is going to cause a tremendous amount of upheaval for these families.
Nadia Rice, chair of the Sullivan County Legislature, shared that her family has experienced prison closures before and expressed her sympathy for the affected correction officers.
It's not only impacting Fallsburg, but it's impacting the entire county. As the wife of a retired state corrections officer, Mid-Orange was one of the first ones to close. We had a year back then. And in that year, we scrambled. My husband went to Sullivan, then he went to Woodburn, went to Otisville, went back to Woodburn, after which he retired after 25 years, thankfully. But I stand here in support of you. We all support you, and we will do whatever we can to make our voices heard in Albany. This is not the right thing to do.
And Alicia McKenneth, single mother and corrections officer with 9 years at Sullivan Correctional Facility, says she's uncertain about her future. She expressed concerns about managing her son's education as he's a special needs student.
My son can't go into any school district. He has to go into a BOCES or a specialized school. He just got into Liberty BOCES, and even those, the programs, he can't slide into any program. Programs are filled up because there's so many kids that need help.
How did you find out? Did you find out like everyone else?
I found out like everybody else. I got an email at 10:30. Actually, my coworker called me and told me that we were closing, and then after I got the email.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts now? What are your plans?
To be honest, I don't have a plan. It's kind of up in the air. I'm trying to figure out where I'll be placed, and then I go from there. I can't make plans too far. We don't have enough time. 90 days is not, technically 80 something days is not enough time.
And have they told you yet exactly what's going to happen? Or?
Absolutely not. August 6th, Albany is supposed to come and let us know, give us a packet. And again, not enough time because August, September, October, November, 3 months, and we start school in September 9th. So it's not an easy transition. And a lot of us have kids. A lot of us have different responsibilities that we have to take care of. A lot of people move close to be closer to the jail. So it's hard.
Yeah.
Sullivan County legislatures and sheriff's office were present at the rally, said they would assist the displaced corrections officers the best to their ability. They also vowed to continue urging Governor Kathy Hochul to reconsider her decision. In Woodburn, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
And Sullivan County District Attorney Brian Connedy released the following statement on the closure yesterday. Quote, I am incensed at the recent announcement to permanently close the DOCCS Sullivan Correctional Facility, and particularly the complete lack of notice to all stakeholders so affected. This facility enjoys a long and proud history integral to the law enforcement community of Sullivan County. This abrupt decision raises more questions than it answers and will undoubtedly upend the public safety, economy, and lives of those that bravely served this county, end quote. He also went on to say he is writing to Governor Hochul about the closure and inviting her to come to Sullivan County herself to see the potential impact. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the Borscht Belt Festival returns to Ellenville this weekend. We'll get all the details about the three-day-long celebration of the iconic Borscht Belt era in the Catskills. Next.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, Ira Flatow here from Science Friday. We view Sci-Fry as a refreshing break from the daily bombardment of political news. You know, there's lots of important and interesting science and technology out there. Whether it's the deep, dark mysteries of the universe or your deep, dark microbiome, it's all right here. So start your weekends with thought-provoking news on Radio Catskill.
You're with Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The second annual Borscht Belt Fest, featuring comedy, food, music, and storytelling, starts tomorrow and runs through the weekend in Ellenville, and it's promised to be bigger and better this year. Here to tell us more is Andrew Jacobs, one of the festival's organizers and the president of the museum's Board of Trustees. Andrew, how you doing over there? Getting ready?
Hey, Tim. Yeah, it's madness. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking a break and to tell us more about it. Now, last year's festival was undeniably a success. Were you taken aback about that?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really know what to expect, but we were kind of overwhelmed. We had a day-long thing on a Saturday and ran out of food by 2. So this year we thought, let's just expand it. So this year we do start on Friday, but the street festival and most of the events are Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, so you've organized it for 3 days now, celebrating the history and culture of the Borscht Belt, obviously the iconic region that we all know here. But if someone's perhaps listening to us outside the region, can you kind of explain a little bit more about why the Borscht Belt and the Catskills are so iconic?
Well, I think, you know, for those who don't know, the Borscht Belt was, you know, a huge vacation draw for millions of people, mostly from the city, but, you know, from all over the region. There was a huge ecosystem of comedy and entertainment that grew up alongside all those hotels. And so the stand-up comedy is a big focus of what we do at the museum because, really that played a big role in the evolution of humor in America. So the festival sort of celebrates that legacy. It's not just about nostalgia looking back. It's also a lot of contemporary, young, comedians and other, artists. So it's really, you know, it's really about sort of, you know, teaching people a little bit about that history, but also just celebrating this region's role as a really big incubator for comedy in America.
And it also, you know, you're going to delve into, you know, the history of the Jewish Catskills and the influence and the impact that those families who flocked here for summer vacations had on the area, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the museum's mission is, you know, sort of drawing a bit of attention to the role that sort of Jews played in kind of the creation of modern comedy in America, you know, sort of from, you know, the shtetls of Eastern Europe to the Lower East Side and then sort of transferred up to the Catskills, where a lot of these comedians, all the famous ones we know and love, really got their start. So it's, you know, and especially now with, you know, a lot of the sort of polarization and anti-Semitism, it's a really good thing to sort of remind people the sort of how diversity is such an asset to this nation and sort of the role that immigrants and groups like Jews played in kind of the development of culture, popular culture in America.
Let's talk about the festival lineup. What's kicking off on Friday?
Friday we have, unfortunately it's sold out, but we have a really cool dinner. We took a menu from the 1968 Waldemere Hotel in Loch Sheldrake, and we have a chef, Chef Josh Cohn, is reinterpreting that menu, and that unfortunately sold out. But we have, we've got Cousin Brucey, you know, the iconic disc jockey. He's giving a talk. We have an outdoor screening of Dirty Dancing. We have a really great musical, the Jackie Mason musical, which is written by his illegitimate daughter and her mother, who had an affair with Jackie Mason, wrote a very, very funny musical about sort of being scorned by Jackie Mason as she was growing up two blocks away from him. We have Rachel Feinstein, a very popular a rising comic. So much, and you know, 50 food vendors. So there's a lot going on.
One thing that also caught my eye was someone we've spoken to before. He's your archivist, Alan Frischman, and it's a private tour of his home, which is chock-a-block with all the ephemera saved from that era.
Yeah, so those who don't know Alan, he's a real national, Sullivan County National Treasure. He was previously a building inspector for the town of Fallsburg. He rescued a lot of stuff from the hotels before they were demolished. He's also the one issuing the demolition order, but then he would go in and save stuff before the wrecking ball came. And so his collection forms the kind of crux of the museum's collection. And that tour of his house, I don't want to call him a hoarder, but there's two brunch tours, unfortunately also sold out. But we'll be offering those regularly throughout the year because they're very, very popular. It includes a bagel and lox breakfast at his place.
Alan, if you're listening, we love you. But you know,
we love you.
It's a cry for help. No, so there's so much going on. You mentioned the comedy. You mentioned some of the comedians. One of the folks that I was looking at was the festival kickoff with Julia Scotti, which is Saturday.
Yes, that's our first comedy show. She was the winner of America's Got Talent, a really great comedian, and those tickets are available. So get off your couch and get them now. I think they're $25 each. Not a bad price for a comedy. Yeah.
And then on Sunday, Mitzvah or Shanda, which is an interactive card game. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's a goofy kind of comedy show. I haven't seen it, so I'm not going to give away anything else. But apparently it's very, very funny. Also, tickets are all for that. So yeah.
And then also Ed Sullivan County presents on Sunday, which is sort of a kind of a throwback a little bit to some of the older, you know, classic comedy.
Yeah, so that's kind of our throwback show. That includes a Joan Rivers impersonator, and there's about five comedians that are performing for that show. Very, very funny stuff. So I would, definitely come see that too.
And then it looks like you're taking over Ellenville for the festival. So what can folks expect in terms of the street festival that's going on?
So that's about three blocks long and also down the Market Street. Yeah, I mean, there's live music. There's Babka Bake Off. Still time to enter that contest. Bring your babka and you could be the winner of a very special prize. We have a Simon Says contest and just all kinds of fun, goofy stuff happening along the street that day.
Food, all different kinds of stuff. There's more information on the website, borschtbeltfest.org. One quick question about parking. Folks can park anywhere on the streets of Ellenville?
Can park anywhere. Overflow parking is Ellenville High School.
All right. There's, again, more information at borschtbeltfest.org. Andrew Jacobs is one of the festival organizers, president of the Borscht Belt Museum Board of Trustees. We'll let you get back to the madness.
Yes, and the weather's going to be glorious, come on down.
It's going to be great. Thank you. We'll see you there. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye. We'll take a break, and when we come back, it's almost time for the Wayne County Fair, and we'll learn about the hard work that the 4-H'ers there have been doing all year long. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Chatskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan,
a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Believe it or not, it's almost time for the Wayne County Fair, and Wayne County 4-H offers a wide variety of projects and activities to educate youth ages 5 to 18, ranging from expressive arts, STEM, and leadership to animal, plant, and environmental sciences. While 4-H events and activities continue throughout the year, the Wayne County Fair Week is special for them. For many, it's a culmination of months of hard work, and Fair Week is where everyone can literally see the fruits of their labors and watch them with all their livestock. Here to tell us more about 4-H at the Wayne County Fair is Jessica Skull, 4-H coordinator of the Wayne County Penn State Extension Office in Honesdale. Jessica, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, are you ready for the Wayne County Fair? I can't believe it's almost already here.
Well, it's coming whether we're ready or not,
right.
But yeah, here it comes.
August 2nd through the 10th in Honesdale, there are 15 4-H clubs in Wayne County. Wow. How many youngsters and volunteers are involved?
Currently, we have about 265 4-H members, and we have 50 4-H screened 4-H leaders who organize the club meetings and the educational lessons, community service, and so much more that the kids do at the club level. And then we also have another 12 brand new 4-H leaders who are somewhere within that screening process, or they may have just completed it.
And I mentioned in the introduction that it's the fruit of their labor, the combination of hard work and throughout the year and the fruits of their labors. A lot of people think of the livestock exhibits at the fair, which is certainly an important part of 4-H. How many 4-H animals are expected this year and what types?
Well, this year we are selling, the kids are raising, and then they have the opportunity to sell for the livestock auction. They have the opportunity to sell about 249 market hogs, 10 meat rabbit pens, 90 market lambs, and 60 meat goats. And we have about 55 market steers that the kids have raised all year long, and then they'll be able to be sold on August 10th.
And so there's also other types of 4-H events or projects, non-livestock projects. What are some of those that will be featured?
So members do have a plethora of 4-H projects that they can take. So, you know, when people think of 4-H, a lot of times they do think of the livestock projects or the animals that they see at the fair. But we do have a lot of non-animal related projects that kids can take. You know, some of the more popular ones are photography, where they're learning to take photos and different kinds of photos. The fishing project is really popular, where the kids are learning how to tie different types of knots and different kinds of baits to use. There's gardening and woodworking, cake decorating. That one's a really popular one. Scrapbooking, collectibles, drawing. There's just so many different kinds of projects that the kids are able to take. And then the knowledge that the kids have gained throughout those projects, that's what's used to create their 4-H project and their educational display that is exhibited at the Red Metal Building at the fairgrounds.
Do all of the 4-H members enter their projects for judging at the fair?
Yes, they do. And that is how they complete their projects, whether it's an animal that they have raised or one of those non-animal projects that goes on display for everyone to see. And then entering a 4-H project in the fair is one of the final pieces to that member completing their 4-H project. And then following up to complete the project after it's exhibited at the fair, then they do have some 4-H record books and record keeping that also needs to be submitted as well. And then that's how the kids complete their projects.
With 15 4-H clubs in Wayne County, why do you think that 4-H is so strong in Wayne County?
Well, I think I have a two-part answer for that one. One, I would say that we definitely have a strong 4-H program here in Wayne County, and that is basically because of the support of our commissioners, and they believe in the 4-H program. They're allowing it to thrive, and they believe that because they believe in the program, they're allowing us to increase our 4-H and Extension Office staff very soon. And this is going to help us provide better service to our Extension customers and 4-H families, allowing the 4-H program to get out into the community to do more. And the other part of that is why I think we have a strong 4-H program is definitely hands down our 4-H volunteers. We not only have over 60 4-H leaders who lead the 4-H club members in the club setting, but we have hundreds of other volunteers that dedicate their time to the 4-H program throughout various committees and different things that they do all year long, whether it's helping teach at 4-H youth day camps or workshops or even stuffing envelopes or helping with fair entries and all the hours that go into fair preparation. There are just so many behind-the-scenes things our volunteers do to make the 4-H program successful, and we could never even name all the things that they do, but, you know, all of those volunteers that help with Extension or 4-H or the Wayne County Fair, you know, they're the ones who make it possible.
It's got to be a proud moment for those volunteers and for you, seeing all of the projects at the fair after the students have worked so hard on them.
Yeah, and that's really one of our favorite things to round out the end of the year. You know, we're kind of winding down our 4-H program year, and just to be at the fair and see all of the kids' projects that they have been talking about all year long. And, you know, just the other day I had a kid say something about his woodworking project, and he said, I can't wait to show you. And so when the kids bring their projects in next week, actually, then, you know, it's a really great time to see the animals that they have raised or even the posters or benches or whatever they have made.
And we mentioned the different things that are going on throughout the year. If folks wanted to get involved, you know, either students or volunteers, where could they find out more information about how to get involved throughout the year?
Yeah, and that's the thing is 4-H is a year-long program and a year-long process. So the 4-H year begins October 1st, and it runs through the end of September. So like I said, we're coming up to the end of our 4-H year now. So if anybody wanted to get involved or to start out in the 4-H program, September and October is a great time to do that. And they can get in touch with us here at the Penn State Extension office in Wayne County. You can Google Penn State Extension or Wayne County 4-H. Our number will pop up there, or there's a website there with more information about 4-H and Extension.
And back to the livestock, the big thing for 4-H and Future Farmers of America at the Wayne County Fair is that livestock auction on the last day. Give us more details again about that.
Yes. So that is where the kids who have raised their animals all year long, the livestock sale ceremonies will begin at about 9:30 on Saturday, August 10th. And that actually begins with some of our, the ceremonies include a parade of all the 4-H members into the livestock arena. And that's something really cool to witness, as the kids kind of flood into the arena surrounding all of the buyers who are sitting there. And then we go into the American Pledge and the 4-H and FFA pledges. We hand out different awards, the scholarships. We have our outstanding senior 4-H members who are going to talk a little bit about their careers in 4-H. And then the sale itself will begin at 10 a.m. with the Grand Champion Market Hog. And that will be in the main livestock arena there. And we'll have one sale ring this year. And buyers can participate in person or online. Altogether this year, we have 142 4-H livestock members and six FFA members who will be selling their animals. And then I had listed the numbers of those animals, but I'll give that again. And we have about 249 market hogs, 10 meat rabbit hens, 90 lambs, 60 meat goats, and about 55 market steers that will be sold from those kids this year.
Wow. Is that number of participants and the amount of livestock, is that about the same or more than you've had in the past?
It's pretty steady. We're pretty consistent. So whether the kids decide to do a lamb or a goat or a hog, whatever they decide to do, it all kind of stays pretty consistent throughout the years.
All right, that Wayne County Fair is coming up August 2nd through the 10th in Honesdale. And if folks, if you want to learn more about 4-H in Wayne County, where can folks go again?
They can check us out at Penn State Extension online. They can call our office at 570-253-5970, extension 4110. And like I said, just Google Wayne County 4-H or Penn State Extension in Wayne County, and they can get a hold of us.
And the website for the fair is waynecountyfair.com. Jessica Skull is the 4-H coordinator for Wayne County Penn State Penn State Extension office in Honesdale, and is talking to us about all the great 4-H events that are happening at the Wayne County Fair and throughout the year. Jessica, thank you so much, and have a great fair.
Okay, thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, catching up with the Delaware Highlands Conservancy and their upcoming events, including cocktails and conversations on Tuesday. This is Radio Chatsco.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl, and the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Another way to help us bring you the news is donate a vehicle you don't need. Car, truck, motorcycle. You can donate to this station and it could mean hundreds of dollars of support. Thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not. Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. Delaware Highlands Conservancy works to protect forests, farms, and waters in the upper Delaware River region. And to promote their work and to get more folks involved, they're hosting a cocktails and conversation reception Tuesday. Here with more details is Samantha Mango from Delaware Highlands Conservancy. Hello.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
You had me at cocktails.
Yes. Me too.
Is that the point? This is, you know, you guys do such great work, but this is a way of kind of going into a different, I don't know, unconventional way of letting folks know what you do.
Yeah, definitely. And definitely to get more people out who are not specifically looking to protect their land through a conservation easement and to learn more about the Conservancy and how we do our work. And maybe they want to volunteer. Maybe they want to come to a program at the Van Scott Nature Reserve. So just trying to get people to come out and hang with us.
I think it's a good idea because the idea of, you know, land conservancy, I think, you know, many are for that.
Yeah.
But they don't know how to go about it.
Right.
So what will folks be able to learn here at this event on Tuesday?
Yeah. So it's going to be at the Conchecton Fire Station in Conchecton. And we're going to have our land protection coordinators, Trey Talley and Kaylin Hubbard, and they'll be talking about their work in land protection. So they primarily work on conservation easements with landowners. But they're also going to talk about different ways to get involved. So if you're looking to volunteer, maybe to go on monitoring visits. We have to monitor each one of our easements every year, so we're always looking for volunteers to help out with that. During eagle season, we're always looking for volunteers to help with eagle season and the bus tours, and just to maybe come out to the reserve and spend a day.
When you talk about monitoring the easements, what does that entail?
Every year, because we're accredited, every year we have to go to every single conservation easement property that we have and monitor them, make sure that the easement's being followed, make sure that there's no violations, make sure that
people
everything
are following
looks,
the yep. agreement, basically. Mm-hmm. And you have a lot of easements.
Yeah. Almost 19,000 acres.
Oh my gosh. You need a lot of volunteers to do some monitoring there.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I didn't know that was part of it, but I guess that makes sense, right? You have an agreement with someone, you have to make sure it's being upheld. And so you rely on volunteers to.
Yeah. And,
do
you
that.
Know, various things can happen. So we have to make sure that there's no outside violations coming in as well.
You guys have a lot of events that are happening. You have something coming up August 10th, the Edible and Medicinal Plant Walk with the Botanical Hiker. Who's the Botanical Hiker?
She's Heather Housekeeper.
Wait, that's not her name. Heather Housekeeper,
yeah,
that's her name?
Yeah, no. That's her name. Also known as the Botanical Hiker.
Well, of course. You needed something more original than right. Heather Housekeeper.
She's going to be at Van Scott Nature Reserve, and she's going to be doing a walk exploring all of the different edible and medicinal plants that can be found at the Van Scott Nature Reserve and sharing with participants the various plants that can be found on their properties and in their backyards. And she'll help people correctly identify them, correctly and sustainably harvest them and prepare them for snacks, for remedies, anything that can be done at home.
Oh, wow. Now, folks, she's sort of pointing out what's at the Van Scott Nature Reserve. You're not pulling that stuff necessarily.
No, she's pointing it at.
Okay, that. You're pointing, not pulling.
Yeah.
But you could go out into other non-protected areas,
yeah,
perhaps.
Yeah, your own home, yeah. In your own backyard.
Do you have a favorite medicinal plant or snack?
I like dandelions.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What did you learn from the Botanical Hiker what to do with them, or what do you do with them?
I've learned from various ways, but I think you can make tea that's pretty good. And the leaves, I think, are like arugula-esque.
That's true. That's good. I think Heather Housekeeper would approve.
Yeah.
And that's coming up Saturday, August 10th.
Yep. And it's $10 for Conservancy members and $15 for non-members.
Okay. And then on the 31st of August, the Pollinator Pathway.
Be on it.
You're working overtime on these titles. I love it.
Thank you.
What's going on with the Pollinator Pathway?
The Pollinator Pathway is a grassroots movement that is focused on protecting and restoring the habitats for bees, birds, butterflies, moths, any kind of pollinating insects. And we're going to help people learn how they can be part of the movement and how they can help reverse the declines in bird and pollinator populations. Which is very important.
Which is important. It's still happening, too.
Yes.
Even
though, yeah.
Despite the increase in awareness, there is still declines in those populations. This is happening again the 31st. And where is that happening?
That's at the Van Scott Nature Reserve,
well. Okay.
From 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. And that's $5 for members and $10 for non-members.
And I can't believe we're talking about September already, but September 7th.
I know. It's here.
I couldn't believe the Wayne County Fair was happening, but that's actually just like in 7 days. Okay. September 7th, you've got the Meadow Party.
Yeah. Meadow Party. It's our second annual Meadow Party. It's going to be at the Van Scott Nature Reserve. We're going to have lots of programs for all ages, for young kids, for families. We're going to hopefully have some food trucks there. I know we had one last year, working on getting another one. So if you're a food truck and you want to come to the Van Scott Nature Reserve,
call. So this is an event to, again, I'm using the word unconventional, but just in different ways to expand your community outreach, to show people what you do.
Mm-hmm. To welcome people to the reserve. It is open to the public. A lot of people don't know that we are open to the public, don't know that we're there. So it's a way to welcome people. We've got our trails. We've got our outdoor pavilion. We've got ponds. It's a really nice place to spend the day.
Have you seen more people taking advantage of the preserve now that you've been out in the community doing more?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of people come through the trails, especially as the weather gets nicer and people want to get outside and spend the day outside.
Yeah, so this event is a free event. The plenty of activities going on. One of them is the Amazing Animal Adaptations presentation.
Yes.
Which is a puppet show?
Yes, puppet show about animals and their habitats. I think we also are having the reptiles.
Yes. I see this on your list here. I'm looking through all the different things. I'm sorry. I'm like stuck on like this list. There's a lot going on that day.
Fly fishing lessons.
Yeah.
So if you want to learn to cast with a fly rod, we're going to have Nick Rubico, the Catskill angler, there doing two sessions.
Yeah. And live animal ambassadors.
Yes.
That's okay. That's good stuff. The kids will love it. The parents will love it for the kids. And you'll love it
for
this. More people coming to see what's going on there.
Yeah.
Tell folks how they can get involved and more information about what's going on at Delaware Highlands Conservancy.
Yeah, they can come to our website, DelawareHighlands.org. If you want to look at events specifically, it's DelawareHighlands.org/events. And then also on the 29th, we're having Taste of the Harvest Jazz Brunch.
Oh, forgot that.
So
sorry.
If anyone's interested in a jazz brunch, it's going to be happening at Cedar Lakes Estate in Port Jervis.
So look, if you're not into cocktails and conversation, you're not into edible medicinal plant walk with Heather Housekeeper,
mm-hmm.
or the puppets and live animals, we've got a jazz brunch.
Yeah.
You guys are covering all the bases.
We're trying to.
All right. Again, Samantha Mango is with Delaware Highlands Conservancy, and their upcoming event, that Cocktails and Conversation and Reception, is at Coshocton Fire Station on Tuesday. And
Tuesday, it's $10, and with registration, you get one free drink, The Conservationist.
All right. And what's the website again?
DelawareHighlands.org.
Samantha Mango, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. See you later. We'll take a break, and when we come back, an artist talk at the Darby Hotel featuring artists Terry Hackett and Liza Phillips. This is Radio Catskill.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskill's show, Electric Mountain. I'll be playing a choice selection of house, techno, electro, and a whole lot more. And every week, I'll feature a guest DJ spinning a continuous set, bringing their unique style. Come dance with us on Electric Mountain, each and every Saturday night, 12 to 2, exclusively done on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Can two people with different political beliefs still have a meaningful conversation? I'm Ronald Kelson, and I'm working with Radio Catskill on StoryCorps' One Small Step, bringing strangers and our community together, one conversation at a time. We are having conversations in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania all year long, and you should be a part of it. Sign up now at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. The latest Somewhere Co. group art show is up at the Darby Hotel just across the bridge in Narrowsburg with artists Terry Hackett and Liza Phillips. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to them about their work.
Good morning, Liza and Terry, and welcome to Radio Catskill.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And you are going to both be doing an artist talk at the Darby over the bridge in Narrowsburg, and you are among the nine artists that are part of an exhibit there, A River Valley. So tell me, Liza, how you wound up being a part of this. A lot of people locally know you because of your rugs that you make.
Right. Well, that's very true. I'm known as the rug designer. It was Terry here who mentioned me when Judy Brown approached her to be in the show, and she said, well, you should see Liza's work. And it's true, I've been painting lots of landscapes for several years, and they're all local material places in the valley here.
Are they watercolor or oils?
They're
or
acrylics.
And Terry, how did you get involved?
Well, Judy, who is a wonderful, spirited person that have been organizing
yes.
these shows for quite a bit and doing a fantastic job with her partner, Randall, she approached me and said, would you like to be a part of it? And I thought, sure, this is a great way to show my work to the community. And they have such fantastic turnout there. It's a wonderful place.
So what are you showing?
Well, I have three pieces that I pulled out of my archives from the late 90s,
mm-hmm.
and I had not seen those pieces for probably 25 years, and I was completely surprised, and they have a bit of sense of humor embedded in them. It's not your typical landscape, but it does very much comment on the state of landscape.
How so?
Well, one piece is called Front Yard, and they're small pieces on wood. So they have they're sort of a wooden box with a hole in it. In the out of that hole, which is more of like a porthole or a door,
okay.
there's a spilling of all this dirt coming out of it. And that's called front yard. And the other piece that I have is called backyard, and it also has dirt in it. So that's how I'm depicting landscape.
And Liza?
Well, Randall and Judy chose quite a disparate group from my studio. And so each piece is quite different from the others. And they range from maybe 5 years ago to just this past year. And some of them have figures, some of them just have trees, some of them, they're very colorful, and others more muted. And one of them was shown at Catskill Art Space a few years ago, 2021, and depicts a little bit of the turmoil going on in the environment.
How does your work fit in with the others? I hear they're all quite different perspectives on landscape.
Well, I'm not sure. I think the jury's out on that one. It's for each viewer to decide for themselves. But Judy was very intent on broadening our sense of what a landscape can be.
I think there's quite a bit of space in the Darby to be able to allow for each conversation to have their own meaning and at the same time open it up into a broader conversation with other pieces. So there isn't really a clear, typical cliche idea of what landscape is, coming from so many different viewpoints, which makes it really interesting.
Yes, I interviewed a couple of artists last month, and they shared that same perspective, that it's not your typical landscape.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very true.
Terry, how long have you been up here?
I was just thinking about that. I think it's now almost 23 years.
Wow.
And I just built this amazing studio about 2 years ago. So I'm now, my studio is here full time. And since I work full time, so I guess I'm here full time.
And where is your studio?
It's in Beach Lake.
And Liza?
Well, I've been here 25 years now.
Wow.
And we have a large barn, which some people may have visited during my rug sales, but it has my husband Francis's studio and my rug studio and my painting studio on the top floor. It's a wonderful place to work.
Are you still doing rugs?
I am, yes. I'm slowly winding it down, but it's been a wonderful, I've been doing the rug business for 20 years now.
Whoa.
And I want to pursue so many other things.
Is there anything you'd like to add before we conclude?
Well, I just think that everyone should come to the Darby to see us and hear us converse. I have no idea. We're going to talk about landscape.
Knowing Judy, you'll talk about other things.
Indeed.
Those talks are always a lot of fun.
They are, and we love what Judy and Randall are doing. So
yes.
Come to support her, if not us.
Yes, exactly.
It's a community event at the Darby. That's right across the bridge in Narrowsburg. The exhibit is a river valley landscape. Thank you so much for coming in. This was wonderful.
Thank you, Valerie.
Thank you, Valerie.
And thanks to cultural reporter Valerie Manzi for that conversation with artists Terry Hackett and Liza Phillips. This is Radio Chatskill, and planning is already underway for the 250th anniversary of the nation's founding in 1776. Ahead of the 250th anniversary of the Revolutionary War, Saratoga National Historic Park may be renamed. From the New York Public News Network, WAMC's Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Aaron Shello Levine has more.
The National Park in Stillwater features self-guided tours of the four-square-mile battlefield with historical reenactments held throughout the year. A recent $6 million effort upgraded exhibits, signage, and trailheads along the park's 10-mile-long battlefield tour road. Now, House Representatives Elise Stefanik, a 21st District Republican, and Paul Tonko, a Democrat representing New York's 20th District, have introduced legislation to rename Saratoga National Historical Park Saratoga National Battlefield Park. The Strengthening America's Turning Point Act would recognize the park's history in the American Revolution. The 1777 Battle of Saratoga ended the British attempt to control the Hudson River Valley. The Continental Army victory would lead to France providing military and financial support to the colonies. Discover Saratoga markets Saratoga County as a tourism destination. Organization President Daryl Legere says the name change just makes sense.
I mean, this change not only honors the profound historical significance of the area, but it really amplifies its recognition on a national level. And right now, you know, with the battles of the Saratoga 250th anniversary fast approaching in 2027, this initiative is very timely. And I think it'll clearly inform tourists of its significance to our region and to our country.
As part of the 2024 county budget, the Saratoga County Board of Supervisors designated $300,000 for the Campaign for Saratoga 250th Anniversary Celebration. States throughout the Northeast are preparing for the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution in 2026. Republican Saratoga County Board of Supervisors Chair Phil Barrett says with the name change, Saratoga County is being proactive.
As we look back on history and appreciate the sacrifice that was displayed in those battles that led to the turning point of the American Revolution, it's incredibly important that tourists and local folks that maybe have never been to the battlefield understand exactly what that hallowed ground means.
Barrett says that battlefield was included in the park's original name, but was removed in the 1930s. The county-level resolution to rename the park received unanimous support.
If you're somebody that just sees the directional signs as you get closer to the battlefield, or if you were looking for a place to visit online, you're going to see Saratoga National Historical Park and may not have any idea that's actually the Saratoga battlefield. So it's very important that we put battlefield back in.
Apart from the potential rebranding of the park, Saratoga County historian Lauren Roberts says her office is working to grow excitement for the anniversary.
I think the word is getting out, and we're all over the county at places like the county fair. We'll be at the Turning Point Parade in Schuylerville, summer camps, library programs, things like that. But I also think as 2026 gets closer, so that's the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, and some of the big events that are being planned in New York City and other places, people are hearing about it.
While her focus is the past, Robert adds that she's already looking to the future.
And as we establish these events so that they're annual, then more and more people will come. And then hopefully that lives on past the anniversary, right? Because whatever investment we make now to create these programs and build up the infrastructure around our historic sites, that's something that we want to continue. We always want to be relevant to the past and, you know, make those connections between what happened 250 years ago and why that matters today.
Regional celebrations are expected to run through 2033. Reporting for the Southern Adirondack Bureau on the campus of Skidmore College, this is Aaron Shello-Levine for WAMC News.
And thanks to the New York Public News Network for that report. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder that One Small Step is our initiative with StoryCorps to bring strangers with different political beliefs together for a conversation, not to debate politics or even American history, but to get to know each other as people. Radio Catskill and StoryCorps are inviting folks to take part in One Small Step, an effort to bring communities together one conversation at a time. You can find more information about that initiative on our website, wjffradio.org. Just click the big red button that says One Small Step, read about it, and then apply to be matched for the One Small Step program. And a reminder, also on the website, you can hear this program and all of our local program. Just go to the show page there for all of the great local programs produced by our dedicated volunteers. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania.
offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Callison Stratton, a singer-songwriter, public historian, and host of Liberation Station here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Liberation Station is a show that highlights the work of female and femme-presenting performers across genre and time. It's my little way of balancing the scales of representation on the radio. Join me for Liberation Station every Saturday evening at 7 p.m., only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, still a shower that could pop up in places, otherwise intervals of clouds and sunshine, high of 80. Clear and less humid tonight, low 56, and looks to be sunny and nice for the weekend. Tomorrow's high 80, a little warmer on Saturday and Sunday. Saturday's high 85, Sunday 87. Looks like a return of some strong thunderstorms on Monday night. On Point is next. It's 11.